things change. The demands on you and your family change. So give it time. Give yourself patience. And then appreciate everything you're doing, because it's meaningful for yourself and your family, and not to deny that. And I think for people who are balancing any aspect of work and life, to recognize that it's important that if you give yourself time, if you respect what you're doing, and you also respect yourself, that you need time for yourself, you're going to do a better job in everything you do.
Hi, I'm Rivke Silver.
And I'm Alex Fluxer.
And this is Deep Meaningful Conversations, powered by Meaningful Minutes,
the podcast where we explore the complexities, nuances, and joys of being a firm woman. Welcome back to DMC. We are so glad you're joining us for today's episode, which is actually thanks to a listener's request. So the summer is coming to an end. The new school year is beginning. Yom Tov is around the corner this year. Have you noticed that, Rivke?
I have indeed.
And so for working moms, and even those who do not work in the summer, those teachers among us, each season really brings its own need to tweak and to adapt to new schedules. So, you know, with school and Yom Tov just around the corner and all the balancing acts that need to happen to pull it all off, we thought this would be a great time to address quote unquote work-life balance.
Yes. And as you can see, we didn't call this episode work-life balance, but we went with work-family synergy instead. Although we're going to be using both during this episode, since work-life balance is so ingrained in our vernacular, right?
Yeah.
However, work-life balance is not really the best way to describe what we're trying to get at here. Balance, quite literally, means 50-50. And we all know that that is not realistic or even ideal, really. Synergy, however, it connotes like a combination, hopefully one that's like mutually advantageous, right? It's dynamic, it's flexible. And it doesn't tell us that our work and our home life needs to be balanced. Sometimes it's combined in a completely chaotic mixture.
That is definitely true. Synergy does give off more integrated vibes. So I think really that's the goal here. And for those of us who work or are students in school, college, etc., we all know that sometimes we need to give more attention to our work life than maybe we ideally want. And since we've got this quote-unquote work-life balancing stuck in our head, I think that language makes us feel upset or guilty that our balance is all off, because it's always off.
Right, exactly. So then we're always feeling guilt.
Exactly. So instead, let's start thinking about how we want these two areas in our lives to be more integrated and synergize. See, I love that word. I'm already feeling much calmer.
Me too. I think one of the big challenges we have here is that we feel that we're being pulled in multiple directions. I mean, because we are. We're being pulled in so many different directions with our attention and our time and physically. And of course, we want to do everything we set out to do the best that we can. But that doesn't always feel possible. It's not always possible. We can't give everything 100% all of the time. And that can lead to real feelings of frustration.
Right. And another, you know, I think deeply frustrating part about trying to achieve this work-life balance is that often this becomes actually a conflict of values. So if you think about it, you know, when our actions are in opposition to our values, we then feel frustrated, annoyed, and angry. And this really gets tricky when it comes to work-life balance, where our values related to work and the rest of our lives often compete. So sometimes a significant time commitment we need to give to something at work, it pulls us away from another significant core value, which is being with our family. So there's this innate tension here, but at the end of the day, we have to be able to make choices, because choices is the key. That's, you know, where being able to choose is empowering. Even if we have to choose a less than balanced situation, the choice in itself is what is empowering.
Exactly. Then we're not just like, you know, victims of our circumstance, but we're actively making the choice to say, like, right now this is higher and this is lower, and that's okay, and it's not going to be forever. The bottom line really is that this myth of work-life balance is that it's something that any of us can attain or maintain, you know. Our lives are in constant flux based on the decisions related to work and family that we make each day. And of course, all of the myriad factors that come up that are literally out of our control. I mean, how many of us have been like, just like at a good stasis, like everything is functioning. And then one little thing, either right. a kid gets sick or something goes wrong or an appointment gets canceled or you crash your car. Exactly. And then everything gets really thrown very out of whack, you know? So I think we're all on a journey, right? You step forward, you step back, you take turns, but we all have our ultimate destination in mind. And let's just acknowledge that it can look messy at times, and that's okay. We're doing the best that we can.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I like how you mentioned journey. I think, you know, everyone has different journeys, different work and home situations, different standards that we're each trying to maintain. Like for some people, you know, the work-life balance, let's say like making dinners, they have a certain standard for how they want to make a dinner. And mm-hmm. if they're not able to meet that standard, that could be incredibly frustrating or yeah. painful or a source of anxiety for them. Where someone else is like, hey, I'm also working full-time, for example, and like my dinner is macaroni and cheese every night, but I'm okay with it.
Right.
So the level of stress is going to be different for each family.
Absolutely.
And I actually would really like to talk about that on a personal level for a minute, Rifki, if you're okay to divulge a little bit.
Well, this is DMC, so, you know.
So, you know, can we talk about, like, the changes and often sacrifices that we need to make in order to try to attain that work-life synergy? Like, in your own life, was there something that, you know, as your family grew, your work-life balance had to change and how you therefore needed to adapt certain standards that were like really important to you at one point, but then you're like, okay, I just can't keep this up.
Yes. Well, I mean, the first thing that came to mind doesn't really have to do with standards, but has to do with just like the evolution of my family and its needs and my work. I used to be a piano teacher for like over a decade. I taught private piano lessons and private clarinet lessons. And if anyone has ever taken their kid to piano lessons taken them themselves, you know, it's after school and after school hours, that's when you take piano lessons. Mm-hmm. And then as my family grew, Baruch Hashem, and as my children got older, like it wasn't, and I had a lot of students, I had a big piano studio. And so basically I was having my husband completely handle bedtime, but after a long day of work for him too, and then it was just not sustainable, and it wasn't fair to him, and it wasn't fair to my kids, and it wasn't fair to me, and it wasn't fair to my piano students.
Were your piano students in your home?
Yes.
During bedtime routine?
Just picture that with a bunch of little kids.
Yeah.
Fine. I mean, all my piano students are basically from homes, so uh-huh. like they whatever. It was not like a unusual, you know, picture for them to see, but at a certain point, I scaled back so that I was just teaching one night a week. And then really, I just made the hard decision that, like, I'm sorry. Like, I can't do this anymore. I have to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard. I had been doing it for over a decade, and I loved it. And, I felt bad. My students then didn't have a teacher. And I tried to, whatever. I tried to set them up with, like, I tried to give, like, options, like, look here, there, and the other. But mm-hmm. I didn't really, like, hand them off nicely.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a whole thing. So that was that. And then also just, like, with music and performing and rehearsing, I've just noticed, like, that over the years, like, as my family has grown and the needs of my family have grown, Baruch Hashem, like, I have had to really reassess what I can do from a work perspective. Thank God, I'm fortunate to be able to freelance. It's a big privilege. And a luxury, really, but I've had to be very selective with each year as my family's needs change. Then I have to kind of reassess, what can I do? Can I do these kind of events? Can I do these kind of events? And so I have really gravitated. This is why I do much more writing than performing, is that writing I can do when my kids are asleep. I can do in the cracks of my day, whereas performing and music and traveling is not really something that is so accessible. So
I've actually had a similar experience where just this month I've had to say no to two major opportunities. One was a job that would be part-time, just like all my other part-time jobs.
Right. How many part-time jobs can we have? How many jobs do we have?
Exactly.
Really, Alex, combining all our part-time
exactly.
jobs.
So if I
together.
Combine three part-time jobs, it's like more than full-time. And it's just, there's only like so much I can do.
Yeah.
The other one was a community project, a mentorship type of project that really, when you're done with it, it's like, you're basically getting a master's degree as your supervision and all of that.
Beautiful.
And it's beautiful. And it's like, yes, of course I want to do that.
Yeah.
But both of these things, when I said no, which by the way, saying no is so painful and so difficult.
Hard. It's so hard.
Yes, it's like cutting off potential and opportunity.
Right. It's major FOMO. Like not just like FOMO like we had like on social media, but like FOMO of like what am I saying exactly? Right. What am I possibly missing on? What opportunities?
And how could I grow? Like how could I grow? But anyway, the bottom line is what I walked away with is this is not the time.
Beautiful.
You know?
Yeah, and exactly. And
by the way, I could tell you this is not the time for whatever reason in my life. I have 5 children. Someone could be listening to this and like, oh, I have 8 children or, you know, relative. Yeah. For me, it just wasn't that. And that's this what we're talking about, this work-family synergy. I feel I could reevaluate, you know, and exactly. If it's not this opportunity, it might be another one. And in 2 years from now, why should I make myself crazy where then it may lead to resentment if I take on too much, if it's not the right time?
Right.
I'd rather open myself up to opportunity when it may be the right time and then I could really savor it and enjoy it. And that's the only way you can live with the saying no, by the way.
Exactly. It's so funny. Alex was like, this is literally the conversation I had just had with my husband like the other night. Because I said, you know, I said yes to a lot of things this year. Baruch Hashem, Hashem sent me a lot of opportunities. And I said to my husband, I was like, Rafael, like this is the year I'm gonna have to say like no to outside opportunities and yes to inside opportunities.
Oh, I like that.
Because exactly, like there's a time and there's not a time. And if it's different for everyone, like we said earlier in the conversation, it's like it's gonna look different for everyone. And he said to me, aren't you afraid though, if you start saying no to these things, then people will stop asking you to do these things. Mm. And I said, yeah, they probably will stop. And that's okay.
Someone else is going to want to get you.
But I said, if Hashem wants me to have these kind of opportunities, then he will just send them to me at a time when it makes sense. But right now, like I am seeing the way that I'm stretched and I want to be able to give to my family what my standards are of what kind of mother and wife I want to be. It looks different for everyone, but I know my standards and I'm like, I am at max capacity.
Yes.
Okay.
I love that. Because you know, and I think everyone can sort of look back and see opportunities that they've taken and please God, it feels like Hashem wanted me to be doing this. Like this is what Hashem wants me to be or do. And then, and I don't think Hashem is going to, for you to stand up for yourself and for your family, Hashem isn't going to punish you for that.
No, exactly.
He's going to open up other doors.
And sometimes and sometimes these opportunities, it's really a Yetzirah. It's really a Yetzirah to say yes to them.
Oh, yes. You know? Because it's like, oh, they asked me and I'm flattered.
And I have these specific kochos and we know we're supposed to use our kochos and we are supposed to use them, but it's all about synergy.
So synergy. And I do want to go back, if you don't mind, when I asked you this question about adapting to certain standards, if I can just throw in a practical one, I remember when I had 3 kids and the house that I was living in before, that my current house, I remember at one point having this very bizarre, interesting experience for me where I had organized and cleaned every room to just so and feeling sitting in my living room thinking there's nothing else I need to clean or organize in this house. It was this weird thing. I have tidied up and organized and there's nothing else that needs work on.
You need a trophy or a certificate.
Can I tell you that I have never, ever had that experience? I remember it so much. It was so vivid because for those who have children, with every additional child, everything changes.
Yeah.
And for me, from 3 to 4 is huge. From 3 to 5 is huge.
Yeah.
If I could think back and think, what parts of my house need attention right now? I'm overwhelmed by this closet that needs cleaning or this basement that needs reorganizing.
Or that drawer that has the things in it.
So this is what I'm talking about with standards is I have had to decrease my standard of organization or even, I don't want to say cleanliness because I don't want people to think
your house is
clean.
Yes,
but
exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like there's
Alex
just a
has
certain,
a very clean house.
I don't have a cleaning lady every day. There's only a certain part that I can do. There have been things that with my work-life synergy, I have had to say no.
Exactly.
This is going on the back burner. You can't deal with this right now because you're doing a million other things and it's okay.
Exactly.
The laundry room looks messy. I've got piles of clothes that need to be put away from previous seasons. I know, guys. I know. I hope you appreciate my vulnerability here. Okay. Yes. That's what my basement looks like. Yeah. Not all of it. Actually, right now, all of it. It's a huge mess right now. But I've had to be okay with that. Now, listen.
Exactly.
I could say, and we're going to wrap up this bit because we have a great guest coming up. But I'm just saying, I want to say that I could say, this is important to me. I'm going to prioritize this. And while I can't do it, I'm going to pay someone else to do it. I'm going to hire an organization. Yes.
If we can delegate,
I have not. There are reasons why I haven't prioritized it that way.
That's also fine.
Right. Right. What I'm saying is there's a certain point where either I've recognized that I can't do it. I'm going to delegate. I'm going to pay. I'm going to hire. Or I'm not going to get it done.
Exactly.
And this is just how life often works as thing as, you know, as our responsibilities increase and as, yeah.
Exactly. And then to make that conscious decision that like, this is something that either I'm going to delegate or I'm going to choose not to feel bad about.
Yes.
And it's okay. Cause that having that underlying simmer of guilt.
Yes.
It just makes everything so much more stressful.
And you have to change your standards.
100%.
Everything has to adapt.
Yeah.
Like my youngest child who falls asleep in my bed. Kid number five.
Yes, that's how it is. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So that's fantastic.
That was a great DMC, Richie.
Such a good
thank
DMC,
you so much. Feeling a lot better now that I shared that.
Anytime. So let us now introduce our guest, Dr. Marian Stoltz-Loicki, who is the Dean of Touro's Lander College for Women. And she guides young women not only on their educational journeys, but also in finding ways to balance work, family, and community. She herself is a firm wife and mom who has lectured and written extensively on work-life issues. This topic is really a passion of hers, and you'll see that for yourself when you hear this fantastic interview. I personally found this discussion to be compassionate and also very practical, which I love.
Yeah, well said. Dr. Stoltz-Loicki brings really a wealth of experience and expertise to this topic. That's why we are really honored to have her on DMC. I also felt it was just so nice speaking to someone who can really diagnose an issue from her, you know, academic lens, but also to suggest insightful suggestions and really practical tips. So I'm hoping that this discussion is helpful, especially to our very special listener who requested it. Let's take a listen. Dean Stoltz-Loicki, thank you so much for joining us on Deep Meaningful Conversations. We are so, so excited and honored to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I have to tell you, I've had the pleasure of listening to several of your podcasts. They are wonderful. It's wonderful. Yeah. And you really managed to touch on topics that I think are very important for women today, not only from women, but women in general. And it's wonderful just to listen. So I'm very glad to be here.
Thanks. That means a lot to us. Thank you so much. Okay, so today we're talking about work-life balance. And we know that, you know, from women, Baruch Hashem today have so many incredible career opportunities, are doing so many different and interesting types of things professionally. But, you know, balancing that work and growing family, some women are in school, you know, and balancing that with their growing family, there are unique challenges to that. And we know that you know, in your professional role, you guide students as they embark on that journey. And we'd love to hear from you how you do that and the advice that you give to those young women.
Right. And I'd be happy to share that. I think, first of all, in terms of guiding women, I've been doing it even before I became dean. Prior to that, I did corporate consulting, and I did one of the topics was work-life balance. Mm. So I did that with Fortune 100 companies and working with women there, as well as now working with students. And I think in terms of guiding people on balance, in some ways, it's easier once people have a family than with students, because students very often, you know, you imagine you can have it all, right? You can do everything. It's no big deal. I'll work it out this way. I'll do that. And then reality hits and it's different. So for students, what I try to do is really give them questions that they can ask themselves. And I look at my role as posing questions to them that they can take with them in the future. So I'll give you some examples. When we're talking about balance and we're talking about work life, I think students imagine I'm going to be a doctor, lawyer, or Indian chief. But at the end of the day, right, what your involvement in a career looks like can be very different. So for example, if you decide to be a doctor, you might go into primary care. You may be a pediatrician, but you may be a neurosurgeon. And the demands there can be very different. Or you might be part of a large practice and only need to be at work 3 days a week, versus more of a private practitioner, which is becoming, unfortunately, more and more rare. And then you're really on call and it's on your back all the time. You may also want to do something remotely and get involved in telehealth. You may be part of an urgent care center. So that the idea is, it's not just the profession you choose, but it is what discipline within that profession that determines the demands and the balance that you're going to have to create between work and life. Mm-hmm. Another piece also is what kind of questions might students want to ask themselves. So several years ago, we had a student who was the eldest of eight, got really excited about law, political science, actually, when she was a student. Extremely bright. She went on to Columbia Law School.
Wow.
Yeah, which was great. And she won all kinds of awards. She did terrifically there. But during her senior year, when she was deciding, she was accepted to Columbia and Harvard. And when she was deciding what she would do, one of the issues was she was already engaged. Her husband was going to be learning in New York. So that made the decision for Columbia. But I felt it was my obligation as the dean also to ask her some of the difficult questions, which is recognize if you're going to be at Columbia Law, you're going to be a corporate attorney because you're not going to be given financial aid. Other schools may want you because you're bright. They may give you scholarships. Columbia may give you loans. And you're going to have to go into corporate law, at least for several years, which is extremely demanding, as you know, to be able to pay off your loans, because she really wanted to support someone who was sitting and learning. And she said, I've asked myself the questions. I know that, and I'm prepared to do that. So for us, that's part of what I'm doing in terms of preparing students is giving them realistic perspectives and also asking them questions that they can use now and in the future.
Beautiful. So it's like you're taking their ideal, their dream, and you're saying, beautiful dream. Now let's take a look at what it entails. Let's take a look at the details.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And I think it's also we bring people on campus. We have career panels. If you're a psych major, well, you can go into social work. You can go into clinical psych. You may want to do something else. So to give students really a sense of what's going on and where possible, when people come on campus, we invite them to share how they balance work and life. So for some, it's working part-time. For some, it's always being home for dinner. For some, it's deciding to pursue a very demanding career in the suburbs near where you live versus in the city, which may require an hour and a half of travel. But everyone is sharing their stories of what they did. So our students get the big picture because it's not just about, obviously, you know, from a university perspective, we care about our students' professional lives. But we expect them, Mirtz Hashem, to get married, to be doing other things as well, and to talk about what that entails.
Beautiful. It's like a very holistic view.
Exactly.
So in your experience as a very successful professional yourself, what tips would you give to women who are already in the thick of it? They're not starting out their careers. They're already in careers. And now they are really seeing the challenges of juggling professional and domestic responsibilities. So for women who are not starting out, but they are in it, what advice would you give to them?
Fantastic. It's a great, great question. So the first thing is when you're thinking about those kinds of things is it's tough. And I'm not going to give you platitudes. So, you know, I can tell you all these things, right? Go and prepare your meals on Sunday and put it in your freezer, right? We've all read that. The reality is, what do you do when your freezer breaks down? So you've prepared the meals and then you don't have it for the week, right? Whatever it is, I always call it the chicken pox theory, right? You know that if you're not prepared well in advance, your kids will get chicken pox the night before your major presentation. Mm-hmm. So the idea is you can prepare and you can get ready, but there's only so much you can do to make things work. I think the first thing that women need to do is to celebrate themselves. When you're talking about being in the thick of it, it's hard. Give yourself pats on the back. Feel that you're doing something great because you are. So number one, look, when you're talking about the thick of it, the family, for all women who have families, and that's so important in our lives. Now overlay that on the professional responsibilities, and that's extra. But women have to think about what are they contributing to their families? Number one, they're contributing financially. They're contributing intellectually. They're setting themselves up. These days, it's role models to their daughters and their sons. And the idea of being able to help be mafarnes your family bakavod, it's a big deal. and it should be celebrated. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, balance. Okay, we have, there was an article a number of years ago by Robert Reich, who was the Secretary of Labor under the Bill Clinton administration. And one of the things he said is it's easy to balance two things when you love one thing and you don't really like the other so well, right? So then you do more of one than the other. So if you like being home, you're home more, you have a less demanding career. If you love your career and you find you love your kids, but you know, you're okay not being there all the time, that's easy. But what if you love both? Mm-hmm. And he said, you have to think of it as integration and synthesis. And that's something else to keep in mind. You can have it all. You can do it an incredible amount, but you may not be able to jump in and do it all at once. Mm-hmm. Give yourself time, give yourself runway. What you can't do when your kids are three, you may be able to do when they're 13. And I think business today is a little bit more forgiving of those kinds of things. So they allow you to take on more and more responsibility. For me, for example, when my kids were young, I worked part-time. And until my youngest was six, I was working 2 days a week. I was out of the house 2 days a week. And after that, I kept taking responsibilities that were more and more demanding. Baruch Hashem, I have a very supportive husband. So I was able to travel even internationally and do things that I could not have done and would not have chosen to do when they were younger. I think the other thing is when we're thinking about balance, it's almost think about a seesaw, right? And imagine that I'm on the seesaw and with someone who is, you know, approximately my weight. We go up and down and we can balance in all kinds of nice ways. Now imagine I want to go on the seesaw with two 10-year-olds, right? So I might have to, how they sit is going to vary so we can balance. Now imagine I want to go on that seesaw with a 4-year-old. How many 4-year-olds would I have to put on so we could go up and down? And if I put on too many, would they start falling off? When we think about balancing work and life, it's the same kind of thing. Recognize that there are different parameters that we have to institute for balancing work and life. And I'll give you one example. Someone I know, what they did when their kids were younger, her husband would go to Minyan in the morning and he'd go to very early Minyan and be at work probably by 6:30 or 7 every morning, depending on how early it got light. And then he would get home at 3 o'clock. Maybe 4, to pick up the kids from school and take care of them. She would go to work at 10:30 so that she could take care of the kids in the morning, you know, straighten up the house, do whatever, and then work till 7 o'clock at night. So the idea is, again, those balance pieces are different. And the last thing is it's unique. It's unique. People have to recognize that what balance means to me and what balance means Rifki and Alex, to each of you and everyone else who's listening, is something different. And we shouldn't be tyrannized by other people's ways of balancing their lives.
Hmm. I also find like it's such a constant work in progress to find that balance. You know, I work from home. You know, and I'm always reevaluating and trying, you know, and acknowledging sometimes that like, wow, this is out of whack. This is not balanced. And I've had women reach out to me to do this episode because they feel like, you know, these are people with 7 children who are 40 years old and are still haven't found a groove. And it changes every year. Yeah. And your new children come into the picture. Some get older.
Or children develop new like issues that you have to start dealing with.
It's almost like such, I'm just curious if you find that it's like a real work in progress. Like everyone's grappling with it.
You put it perfectly. Absolutely. Everyone's grappling with it. And I think one of the problems is a lot of literature that's out there has nothing to do with our community, right? So it's very different if you're talking about, gee, here are the, you go on a WhatsApp group for moms, moms in tech, moms in business, moms in this, and they're talking 1 or 2 children.
Yeah.
Right.
What do you do exactly when Baruch Hashem, you have 5, 6, 7, 8 children.
One or two children and no Yantiv and no Shabbos.
Right.
That's exactly right. And you have no Yantiv, no Shabbos, and no expectation that you want your husband also to go out and learn. So you're right. It's an absolute work in progress what you do. And we need to recognize that. But you know what's interesting? On the one hand, we live in our world, and on the other hand, we live in the real world. So back to social media and Insta. So here I am getting ready for Shabbos and thinking I'm doing a good job. And then I go on Insta and see the beautiful Shabbos tables others have and how their children are perfectly dressed 45 minutes, an hour before Shabbos.
That was last week's picture, by the way.
Right, exactly. That picture was not taken that week.
And you have to say to yourself, that's exactly right. There is a gray. That happened to me also a week ago or a month ago, but it's not necessarily every week. And it does. If it does happen to somebody, call a kavod for them.
Yeah.
But the idea is we live in this world where things are gray and we have to give ourselves a break. The other thing I think that's really important is to recognize what is really important. So you come in from a busy day at work and here are your kids and you're 20 minutes, half an hour late because the trains didn't work. There was traffic, whatever was going on. Well, does it matter if food is on the table 30 minutes late? If you're having a party for your kids, yes, mom, your mom really made that perfect birthday cake every time you had a birthday. Mm-hmm. But maybe nobody, your kids don't care if it's a purchased birthday cake, as long as we have the party.
Right.
So sometimes you have to say to yourself, what really matters? What am I setting impossible standards about? And what are the things that really matter?
Yeah. And with the birthday cake example, I'd also just like to add, like, let's say your kid does care. Let's say your kid really wanted you to make some homemade, whatever, themed cake, and you couldn't. And maybe that conversation with the child of, like, modeling that you're doing the best that you can do, you know?
Right. And what about, here's another idea, making that perfect cake as part of the birthday activity with that child.
Right. Be creative. Ooh. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us top three challenges facing from working women.
Okay. So I think the top three, first of all, and we're going to be a little bit general and a little bit COVID specific. Okay.
True.
Because we have this. So the first one is, as we said before, it's that we're not balancing two things. It's not work and family. It's work and family and Yontif and Shabbos and all the other things of it from life. So that's the first piece, is that it's complex. And of course, you know, when you're asking beyond just work and family, how do you explain, well, I'm not going to be out all of Tishrei. And by the way, Nisan's going to come. And if I'm lucky, it'll only be 2 weeks, but it might be longer than that.
Can you imagine someone asking for 2 weeks off of work, you know, and their law firm? It's like, what, are you going to the Caribbean? Like, where are you going?
To my kitchen.
Yeah. Like, who does that? Who takes off kind of time off?
That's right. And don't call me and don't do this. And I would say the way to address that is you do have to get a lot of things ready early. And you have to think about what to tell your managers. Because I think there's another piece that we didn't discuss, which is the issue of how do you kind of manage up? How do you let your managers know what to expect? So when you're doing that, I would say the corollary of the first piece is how do you explain Yontif and Shabbos? In a place like New York, you may expect, okay, people know what's going on. They may or may not. But in a lot of communities, you may be the first firm person that's being employed. How do you explain those things? And how do you do it in a way that makes sense? And also, what do you do so it doesn't seem like you're trying to get out of doing something, but you're actually being in the thick of it and an important contributor to the organization? So I think that's one piece. I think the other, a second piece, and you say, and this goes beyond just from women, but I think it's making room for others to help you. And what I found, and I spoke about this in, I wrote a book a number of years ago on dual career couples. And one of the things I mentioned is a lot of women feel that, you know, gee, if I let others do it, even if it's my husband, then that sort of shows I can't. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's, you know, some kind of chisaron in me. But the idea is, first of all, having your husband be involved in your family is fantastic. It's fantastic for him. It's fantastic for your children. But it's also if your mother or your mother-in-law offered to do things for you, why not? it's good for your kids. It's good for you. So it's like, I think that's a challenge for a lot of working women, is to feel comfortable making room for others. It doesn't say anything about you as a parent, but it does give you some extra bandwidth in a way that can be really, really positive. And I think very, very valuable.
Beautiful. I think, yeah, a lot of women do have a hard time delegating in general. I mean, I'm speaking primarily about myself at this exact point. I have a hard time delegating things. And I think delegating and accepting help are like two sides of the same coin, I think, no?
Yes, it definitely is. And it's something where it's a good skill at work and it's a good skill at home. So I think even at work, and listen, I have to admit sometimes it's a challenge for me. And I have a lot of people to whom I can delegate things. But you always say, well, if I delegate it, that's good because it gives them an opportunity to develop and grow, certainly when it's someone on your staff. But will people think I can't do it? And so it's exactly the same kind of feeling you can have as a manager and as at home. And, you know, to your point, and I love it, the idea is sometimes you have to think of home as a microcosm of what we're doing. So learn to delegate things at home, sometimes to your kids. And you have to be reasonable with that, depending on their ages. You don't want to delegate because you don't want to do it. You want to delegate to help them learn how to do it. But learning how to do that well can translate into things you do at work and being more effective at work. So.
Okay, great. I think we have one more challenge if you have one, number three.
Yeah, so I think, I'll tell you, I think the other thing is building a support group for yourself. And I think this is, and people who you can rely on. So it's the kind of thing, again, at work, people will say, if you say behind every man, there's a woman cheerleading him, say behind every woman, there's a team cheerleading her. And I think women are very good at relationships. So the idea of putting together that cheerleading team, but I think beyond that is the team at home. The people who will say to you and you listen, you don't always have to follow, but say, give yourself a break, take it easy, move back a little, create a little bit of time for yourself. And I think that's the other thing, is not feeling guilty. And this is, again, a corollary to the third piece, is feeling okay about giving yourself time. And so whether, right, whether that means that this week I'm going to buy food for Shabbos instead of cooking, whether it means, you know, if you can afford it, we're going to go away, whether it means taking some time before you come home to go to the gym, if not all the time, periodically. Even, you know, what a lot of women do, or hopefully a lot of women do, but what a good thing to do is putting out a DNS, do not schedule, if you need to do something with your kids or whatever.
You do that. You put a day in your calendar.
I do. This is a day that nothing can get put on this day. I actually haven't done it in like 2 months. So I'm gonna start doing it again.
But to do it for yourself, not just so you can have time with your kids, but doing it so you have time for yourself. So I think all of those can be extremely valuable.
So we have all of these things within our home, within our work. How do we know when to also contribute communally? Because we are a very communal people, as from women as Jews, and we want to give to the community, and it's, we have an achrayas, but how do we know when is the right time to do it?
Good. So Rivki, I'm glad you asked about that, because I'll tell you a couple of things. First of all, this is a topic that becomes, in the almost post-COVID era, even more relevant than it was before. So contributing communally, I think, is extremely important. It is the achrayas. It is who we are. It is how we think about things. But the problem is sometimes we're doing so much between work and life, there's not time to do it. And it becomes even more important. And I'm going to speak about issues related to singles even more so. Because I think one of the pieces of community is, you know, we say we're doing it for others, but it's for ourselves as well. And the networking opportunities that are involved in communal engagement are enormous. For singles, being involved in the community is even more important, because they need that networking. And that's a way of, for careers, for personal, for professional, et cetera, it becomes very, very important. And I think in general, when we're looking at the work-life issues, that's something to think about. Another piece that I think communal engagement is important for singles also is because in the post-COVID era, the cost of everything we know has just skyrocketed. So maybe you might have gone down to Florida with everybody else, but it's prohibitively expensive at this point. Being involved in your community is another way to engage with others, to have that broader network, whether or not you can do other more expensive activities. So I think that becomes important. Now, I think more broadly, the issue of communal engagement, as I mentioned, it's networking. But the questions you ask is, what does communal engagement mean? Is it a national organization? Is it your shul or something within your community? But again, in the COVID era and the post-COVID era, it's inviting somebody for a Shabbos meal. It's knocking on the door of someone who lives across the hall who may be older and making sure they're okay. And when you're thinking about community engagement, it is on all of those different levels. I was involved in a number, and I've been involved in a number of national organizations, the American Jewish Committee, and locally Jewish Community Relations Council, again, national with the OU. And it broadens you. It broadens your opportunity. But you have to see it as enhancing what you do at work or at home. In other words, just getting involved in communal organizations because you should is just one other thing to exhaust yourself with. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah. I want to give you a round of applause.
Thank you, Alex, because otherwise it's just another burden, and we're burdened enough, right?
Yeah.
But if you see the big picture and you see you could connect the dots, then go for it.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And it's also important, I would just add that, like, a lot of us have what to give in terms of communally. And just because we said no to this project at this particular juncture in life doesn't mean that we've said no forever and we can never return to it, or we can never, you know, pursue it at another stage. You know, no doors are closed forever.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's a matter of, that's the hardest thing to think about. But one of the nice things is what I've been reading, at least, and you know, I try to practice what I preach. So I really do try to be sensitive to work and family issues and the needs of multiple people on my staff. But, excuse me, but I think the other thing is, what I'm reading about is more businesses are being a little bit more realistic about the needs of women and families. Mm-hmm. So for example, remember the old dictum of, you know, never have a blank space in your resume, right? In yes. other words, do something, volunteer, do this. What I'm reading is people don't care as much now, right? If you have a year that you're not there, doesn't matter. Wow. And along with what you've probably heard of as the big resignation, which is people just leaving, right. The number of women I know in their 30s and 40s who are saying, I'm leaving, I'm fine, I'll get another job, is huge. And when I speak to them individually, and some are there are alums, some are I know in other ways, but what they're saying is, after I calculate commute, daycare, you know, clothing, right, et cetera, I come home with almost nothing. So if I'm not happy with what I'm doing, I might as well take a break, be home with my family, and figure out what my next steps are. So I think we're seeing these changes in the workplace. I also think that businesses, not everybody, but there are businesses that are out there that are totally flexible. I read one which I was like, I think I'm quitting my job tomorrow. I just read about this organization, very small, they want to grow organically and carefully, and they give a 6-week sabbatical every 2 years to any employees.
Nice.
They send you on a full vacation with your family once a year. I'm like, oh, so there's the whole sense of what is normative in the workplace is changing. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, I don't want everyone, you know, all of your listeners to think, okay, I'm going and asking my boss for this tomorrow. But there are ways to survey your organization to have a sense of, are they work family friendly? But also, if you're looking at a new job, is it work family friendly? So number one, obviously you can talk to other people who work in the organization. But for example, if you've been at home working during COVID and now everybody's coming back to the workplace and people say to you, so how does it feel to get back to work? You have an issue there, right? Because you have been working at home. Right. You've been doing everything. And now if people think you're not, it's something to think about in terms of your organization. And you may need to educate some of the key players or get others to educate some of the key players about those issues. Mm-hmm. But also, if you're looking at other organizations, you can ask questions about what is their work-life policy? Do they have flexibility? What do they think about it? And those questions are totally normative for people at this juncture.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
That's great. Great tips. Thank you.
Fantastic. Great. We shouldn't be afraid to ask those questions that are going to ultimately directly impact our lives, you know? Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. This has been such a phenomenal conversation. So many amazing just nuggets of wisdom that I think all of our listeners will be able to benefit from. And we so appreciate you coming and taking the time and spending time with us on Deep Meaningful Conversations and wish you just continued success in all your endeavors.
You're welcome. And Rifki and Alex, it's a pleasure. As I said at the beginning, it's just such a pleasure to speak with both of you, listen to both of you. I think you're doing something that's so important. And what I would say is, again, you know, just parting comments to your listeners is just to remind them that things evolve. Mm-hmm. And as I think, Alex, you might have said it earlier, the idea is things change, the demands on you and your family change. So give it time, give yourself patience, and then appreciate everything you're doing because it's meaningful for yourself and your family, and not to deny that. And I think for people who are balancing any aspect of work and life, to recognize that it's important that if you give yourself time, if you respect what you're doing, and you also respect yourself, that you need time for yourself, you're going to do a better job in everything you do.
Absolutely. What Beautiful. A great, great message. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Here's this episode's takeaway. The language we use surrounding our work and family life is important. Try to avoid thinking of your life as a balancing act because we can never get it 50-50. Instead, think of your work and family life as something to synergize. It's a combination which is hopefully mutually advantageous. Both work and family benefit from each other.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us today for this episode of DMC. We always love listener feedback, and there are a few ways that you can provide it. First, of course, you can rate and review our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And you can always reach us on social media and send us DMs, PMs. You know how it goes.
Exactly, exactly. And as always, you can email us at dmc@meaningfulminute.org. We love getting those emails. Speaking of Meaningful Minute, we do want to give the whole Meaningful Minute team a huge shout out for all the work they put into making DMC happen. See you next episode.